What for what meaning? It's a different meter. I think this same shloka can be chanted in the Govinda Madhipurusham style also. What for what meaning? Devaha, the demigods. Uchuhu, say. Pura, formally. Kalpa, apaye, at the devastation of the kalpa. Swakritam, self-produced. Udari kritya, having drawn within your abdomen. Vikritam, effect. Tvam, you. Eva, certainly. Adya, original. Tasmin, in that. Salile, water. Uraga Indra, on Shesha. Adhi Sayane, on the bed. Puman, personality. Shesha, taking rest. Siddhae, by the liberated souls like Shaunaka, etc. Hridi, in the heart. Vimrishita, Vimrishita. Yeah. Meditated on. Adhyatma Padavahi. The path of philosophical speculation. Saha. He. Eva. Certainly. Adya. No. Akshna. Of both eyes. Yaha. Who. Pathihi. On the path. Charasi. You move. Vrityan. Servants. Avasi. Protect. Naha. Us. Translation. The demigod said, Dear Lord, formerly when there was a devastation, you conserved all the different energies of material manifestation. At that time, all the inhabitants of higher planets, represented by such liberated souls as Shaunaka, as Shaunaka, were meditating on you by philosophical speculation. You are therefore the original person. And you rest in the water of devastation on the body of Shesha snake. Now today you are visible to us who are all your servants. Please give us protection. You can repeat the translation. The demigod said, Dear Lord, formerly when there was a devastation, you conserved all the different energies of material manifestation. At that time, all the inhabitants of higher planets, represented by such liberated souls as Shaunaka, were meditating on you by philosophical speculation. You are therefore the original person, and you rest in the water of devastation on the bed of Shesha snake. Now today, you are visible to us, who are all your servants. Please give us protection. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The devastation indicated in this verse is the partial devastation of the lower planets within the universe when Lord Brahma goes to sleep. The higher planets, planetary system, beginning with Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, are not inundated at the time of devastation. The Lord is the creator, as indicated in this verse, because the energies of creation are manifested through his body, and after annihilation, he conserves all the energy within his abdomen. Another significant point in this verse is that demigod said, We are all your servants, Vrityan. Give us your protection. The demigods depend on the protection of Vishnu. They are not independent. Bhagavad Gita therefore condemns the worship of demigod because there is no need of it and clearly states that only those who have lost their sense go asking favors of the demigods. Generally, if anyone has material desires to be fulfilled, he can ask Vishnu instead of going to the demigods. Those who worship demigods are not very intelligent. Besides that, the demigod says, We are your eternal servants. So those who are servants or devotees of the Lord are not very much concerned with fruitive activities, the performance of prescribed yajnas or mental speculation. They simply serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead with love and faith, performing everything with that loving service, and the Lord gives such devotee direct protection. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, simply surrender unto me and I will give you protection from all the reactions of sinful activities. This material world is so created that one has to act sinfully, knowingly or unknowingly. And unless his life is dedicated to Vishnu, he has to suffer all the reactions of sinful activities. But one who surrenders and dedicates his life for the service of the Lord has direct protection from the Lord. He has no fear of suffering from sinful activities, nor does he desire, willingly or unwillingly, to do anything which is sinful.
चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरुवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकलामयं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं हे कृष्णकरुणासिन्धु दीनबन्धु जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमस्तुते तप्तकञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवि प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये पञ्चकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यः च पतितनाम पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिन्ति नामिने। नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादि पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे।
जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण। Yesterday I honestly tried if Narayani Mataji could give class, but Shukdev Prabhu said no, she doesn't want to. I was thinking if I can escape. So we are continuing with the sections of prayers by different personalities. Yesterday Mataji was explaining how the Agni, fire god, was offering his prayers, and today the demigods. They haven't mentioned which specific demigods because they are huge in numbers. So they are offering their prayers to the Supreme Lord after the whole pastime of Daksha and the sacrifice being reinstated has happened. So many, many interesting points are there from today's verse. Taking a little bit continuation from yesterday's, because Mataji covered the essence of yesterday's verse amazingly. That's the holy name, which is the Sankirtan Yajna, the chanting of the holy name, is the most important thing above all the yajnas of sacrifice, especially for Kali Yuga. But interestingly, these personalities, Agni or fire god is offering his prayers, and now here it's demigods. So current modern society actually laughs at such ideas now that we still have personalities like fire god, or we still believe that they exist, or wind god or water god, Varun Dev, because the whole idea of the mindset is this is very primitive. This is in the forest, in old age, people in ages bygone, they would worship nature, they would worship elements. But from Vedic point of view, from our point of view, we understand that these elements have a personality who are controlling these elements. And that's why in Vedic culture, never, if someone knows about it, most of us don't even know, but if someone knows, then they would see it as disrespectful to fire itself when we will try to in cold chilly winter we would try to heat our feet and keep in front of fire. It would be like you're disrespecting fire, seeing that there is fire god, fire personified, and it's not respectful to fire god. What to speak of, which is very common nowadays, is of passing stool or urine in water. So if you see the whole Vedic concept, stool or urine was passed on earth. Now if you do that, people, police might arrest you because that's illegal. But immediately a counter question can come that earth is also Bhumi Devi. Then why on Bhumi Devi it was allowed to pass stool or urine, why she was not respected in that way? Means we have to do it somewhere. So Bhumi is also known as mother. So she is Dharani. Dharani means one who is holding us. So a mother is there, and the young child on the lap of the mother does pass stool or urine, and mother doesn't mind out of her affection. That's her position, that's her role. So for Bhumi Devi it's allowed. So these are very specific details. And like Devamani Swami sometimes used to say that when we hear these very specific details, last time when he was giving Bhagavatam, he was saying that when we hear these very specific details, it forces us to believe that this is all mythological, a modern mindset. How such specific details, how so much of sensitivity is there towards even these elements or understanding that their personalities behind it. It's too much of detail, must be mythological. But anyways, this was a cultured society which is seen today as uncultured if someone thinks or does act like that. So there's a lot of criticism, even in India, movies are made by when we say that someone goes and goes for a call of nature outside in the fields. But that was a standard culture. You don't keep unclean things at home. Your toilets were never at home. Now the reality is very different. That was how it is. So you go out in fields or in nature, and then there's a lot of debate can happen on that even now also, but we'll not get into that topic. That was just a side point. But coming to today's verse, understanding that these demigods, who are again great personalities, offering their prayers, very interesting thing they begin with is that they are glorifying the Supreme Lord. That after the annihilation takes place, which is not the complete annihilation, which is a semi-annihilation which takes place, here Prabhupada says the partial devastation of lower planets happens within the universe. So that's when the day of Brahma finishes and he goes for his sleep, which is I don't know how many millions of years, 4.3 trillion years or something. After that, when this partial devastation happens, so a very nice scientific understanding which even modern science does accept is displayed, is explained here, which is energy is never destroyed. The Supreme Lord, here the demigods are confirming that the energy which is produced from the body of the Lord, Supreme Lord himself is producing those energies. Once the partial annihilation takes place, he only conserves those energies back in him. It's never destroyed. And they are again displayed when the creation takes place. And a similar, when a complete annihilation takes place at the end of Brahmaji's life, then all these energies, including all the universes, goes back in the abdomen of the Supreme Lord. And when the time of creation comes, again, those energies are reinstated in their required positions, in their required state. So, Bhagavatam is talking about that point. I was speaking to one of my friend, and then you know many of us speak to new people or those who are not interested, and then they question in a way that as if whatever you're speaking, does it coincide with current scientific understanding? And once it does, then it makes so much of sense to common people that once whatever the theories are available in market now, or whatever the accepted theories available are there, If your conception of religion or if your religion fits into that, then I may think of learning more about it. Otherwise, I have not interested. So that's how times have changed now. There is a lot of faith on what science approves, whereas just few, maybe I would say 50 years before, if someone would make a statement, the other person would joke with him, saying that you are speaking as if it's a Veda Vakya, as if it's authority given in the scriptures, or as if it's from the Vedas. Whereas now, no one will speak like that. They'll make a joke out of it, that you're speaking as if it's from the Vedas. Vedas have no values now in people's life. And the ancient scriptures have no value because the authority is changed now. So now everything is seen from that perspective. That's something which is a little unfortunate, but it's a reality. So here the demigods are continuing, and Prabhupada makes a very interesting statement in the purport, which doesn't go well with many coming from India, especially where a lot of confusion does take place in terms of who is Krishna, who is all the personalities, who is demigods. So Prabhupada is immediately quoting the demigods, saying that we are your servants and we offer you respectful obeisances. So Prabhupada is not leaving a chance to in any of his purports to glorify the supreme position of Krishna. So here also he's speaking of that point. The demigods are saying that you are visible to us who are all your servants. So they are accepting their position as the servant of Vishnu, of the Supreme Lord. And then, very interesting point they say is, please give us protection. So this is not a crisis situation for the demigods at this stage. It's a happy moment. Your fire sacrifice is happening, the Supreme Lord has appeared, everything is normal. Daksha's whole mess is now cleaned up. The whole fight is over. Everyone is in good serving mood. And then also the demigods are praying, please give us protection. And it gives a very important message for us that even if we are in happy times, it is always still important to seek protection of the Supreme Lord. You know, there is a very nice thing Prabhupada used to sing a lot. Not a lot, but at least in few occasions he did that. The dukh mein simran sab kare, sukh mein kare na koi. Jo sukh mein simran kare, to dukh kaay hoi. Prabhupada would say that in distress, everyone approaches God very quickly because it's distress. We need help. Mataji was telling yesterday about Indadumna Swami's example, how when the plane was crashing, then even that atheistic scientist would say, yeah, maybe I may believe, and he chanted Krishna's name. So in distress it's easy. In distress one can call out for God, can approach God, but as soon as that distress is gone, one stops approaching God. They just don't want to approach God. So, but here demigods are showing very good example that they are still seeking protection of the Supreme Lord even if things are very normally going. That is their godly nature. That's why they are demigods. That's why they are great personalities who are always favored by the Lord. That when they are actually in distress, they are protected by the Supreme Lord, and they are not just left over. In the purport, as Prabhupada goes, he really explains this point very clearly, that one who surrenders and dedicates his life for the service of the Lord has direct protection from the Lord, and he has no fear of suffering from sinful activities. So these are the positions of saintly people and the demigods also. So here in Bhagavad Gita, there are few verses which very strongly speaks about demigod worship. Many of us would have heard those verses, but especially in chapter number 9, verse number 23. And as soon as you speak to someone coming from Indian background, including all of us, at least me, when I started practicing Krishna consciousness, there were so many confusions. especially related to demigod worship, because naturally we were attached to certain personalities. Naturally there was attraction to certain goddesses. And to suddenly you come to ISKCON temple and then someone says, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, at rest everyone, no one else is God. Because the common mindset is that you make a pick, you choose whomever you like based on which community you come from, based on which television series you like the most, or based on what your parents taught you from the childhood, or even based on what you have heard, that who gives the benedictions fastest. So based on so many things, we make our pick, and we would call, oh, he is my Ishtadev. We have no clue what it means, but he is our favorite one. He is the one. And the mindset is so clear that you pick anyone and the result is ultimate destination. You may pick anyone. So that is very clearly there. What Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter, verse 23, अविधि पूर्वकम्. So he says, those who are devotees of other gods and who worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of Kunti, but they do so in a wrong way. So these are very, very sharp verses. Next couple of verses also, Krishna doesn't leave any scope of any doubt in these verses, and Prabhupada's purport even clarifies the point even harder. Prabhupada says in that purport, the demigods are, so to speak, different officers and directors in the government of Supreme Lord. One has to follow the laws made by the government, not by the officers or directors. Similarly, everyone is to offer his worship to Supreme Lord only. That will automatically satisfy the different officers and directors of the Lord. The officers and directors are engaged as representatives of the government, and to offer some bribe to the officers and directors is illegal. This is stated here as avidhi purvaka. When I was reading this purport today morning, the whole concept of bribe, come especially in India, is so common. You know, you just go to any department, any place, nothing works without a bribe there. So this mindset became very more clear, that this is the same nature why we approach demigods. Quick fix. For a quick fix. The next, and what is that quick fix? Bhagavad Gita 4.12, Krishna says, men in this world desire success in fruitive activities, and therefore they worship the demigods. Quickly, of course, men get result from fruitive work in this world. So, very quickly, government process will take a couple of months. But if you give some bribe, you're done within less than a week. So, very quickly, this process is practiced. And the same mindset is there when it comes to religion, or when it comes to approaching the Supreme Lord. Whereas Krishna, just in 7.23, when he says, antavattu falamtesham tadbhavati alpamedasam devan devo yojanti mad bhaktayanti mam api. He says, men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of demigod, but my devotees ultimately reach my supreme planet. So I don't think so it can be more clear than this, how Krishna so clearly speaking that the whole approach is a very temporary, very selfish, very greedy approach. And one should just approach that one Supreme Personality of God, one person. So that creates another topic of debate or questioning that we see in many world religion, which talks about, we say, some Christians say, in Christianity it says, Jesus is the only way to approach God. In Islam also say, Muhammad is the last messenger. There is no one after Muhammad who can give this message. And they really push this point out very, very loudly. that Muhammad is the last messenger, and through him only one can attain Allah or God. Whereas we see in Vedic culture there is vast Puranas, vast scriptures are given explaining and glorifying the same demigods, same personalities, where Krishna is also speaking very heavy in Bhagavad Gita against it. So how to understand that, are we different or Vedic conception is different, which does involve all the personalities? What is their role? What is their positions? Because in some Puranas, especially in Linga Purana, Shiv Purana, Lord Shiva is very specifically glorified as supreme. So is that Purana faulty? Is it to be accepted, not to be accepted? What to do? So, in Matsya Purana, it is explained that all the different scriptures are categorized in three forms, which we have heard many times, that is Sattvagun, Rajagun and Tamagun. All these Vedic scriptures, all these Puranas especially, are categorized in three categories. And six fit in Sattvagun, six fit in Rajagun and six fit in Tamagun. So they are Tamasic scriptures, which are in lower modes. So six Puranas are in lower modes, which may glorify personalities different to what it's glorifying in the Sattvagun scriptures, which is like Padma Puran, Bhagavat Puran, and Purans like that, they come in Sattvagun category. So it's exactly like if there are two very great sportsmen, one is number one, one is number two in their rankings. So when you are speaking to the person, when the interviewer is taking an interview of person number two, or when you are speaking to a person who is on rank number two, you will not keep pushing the point that you are number two, you are number two, you are number two. You will just glorify that person's ability, his qualification, how great he is, how amazing superstar he is, how popular he is, how his skills are. So that's exactly what these Puranas and the lower modes are doing. That they are glorifying the personalities like Lord Shiva or other demigods, if the Purana is focusing on them. They are only focusing on their glories, not their position. Why? Because that's again the system of the Supreme Lord, that when he does that, he is, as we said in many world religions, if someone doesn't accept the concept that my spiritual progress only depends on certain messenger or certain personality, then he will not practice anything, because there is nothing else for him to do. But what Vedic scripture, what Vedic literatures are doing is that it gives facility for anyone and everyone to come and be situated in whatever your consciousness has evolved to, whatever level you can be situated, and then progress from there on. So if someone is not elevated, not yet on the platform beyond Tamagun, for these people it's very attractive to know that there is a personality who has snakes around and who is in ashes. And you know, recently our catering team has come from Rainbow Serpent Music Festival. If someone has seen Kumbh Mela, which is a religious gathering, and there you see all kind of sages, some Naga Baba, some sages who are very austere, some sages are there who are from decades and decades there, they are completely naked, not wearing anything, very, very, the tapasya, full, complete austerities they do. So you see a same, similar gathering, but very unreligious, very, very irreligious gathering in such music festivals, where very austere life is for 4 or 5 days is too austere for us who are going to there to serve. Krishna is very austere. You sleep in tents, and then it's cold at night, and it's so hot in day, and then just in day and night, 25 degree temperature, at least 20 to 25 degrees, there is a change of temperature, and then bodies are not able to cope up. It takes a week for you to recover after you come back. With a clean food, clean habits, and there, these people are there with complete drugs, intoxication, And then whatever austerities they do with no clothes and then dancing all day and night and that. So, powerful. Prabhupada told me yesterday that I am 50 years now and I have never seen Maya like this in my whole life. This was so intense. When they hear in such lower modes when they are operating and when they hear of personalities like Lord Shiva who appear externally to move around in these modes, then there is a chance for attraction. And that's the beginning of their spiritual progress. He's in ashes, he has snakes around, and then he lives with ghosts and goblins. You see the tents, you get scared night if you go alone and you see the tents, how they make the tents, it's scary. The music goes on, the artwork they do, the type of lighting, alone you feel scared to even go. So, but it's very attractive. So Vedic scripture gives facility for anyone and everyone to join the boat and then progress further. And if that is not given by the merciful Supreme Lord, then there is no scope. Because many people question, then why Puranas are glorifying these demigods? Why these scriptures are saying he is supreme? This question, especially in this section, would have come in many Bhagavatam classes. That why is saying Lord Shiva is the supreme? Or why is saying such and such personality is the supreme? So, little important point to understand. But in Skanda Purana, Lord Shiva makes a very interesting statement. He is speaking to Kartikeya and he is saying that if there is a contradiction between a Purana in lower mode and a Purana in superior mode, suppose a Purana who is in Tamagun and a Purana which is in Sattvagun, like if there is a contradiction between these two Puranas, Lord Shiva himself is telling to Kartikeya that the conclusion of the Purana in superior mode should be accepted at any given time. So he makes it very clear if there is a contradiction in conclusions. So, you know, even Lord Chaitanya, so when we hear such, in his pun also that's there, Prabhupada himself said that he was planning to install some demigod deities in temples, but he didn't do it because that would confuse the people coming in, that again it will become like any temple in India where no one knows anything and everything is worshipped by whatever will person has, whatever understanding one has. So he wanted really to specify who Krishna is, who the Supreme Lord is. So he purposefully didn't install any of the demigods deities in any of his temples, just to avoid that confusion. So, but that doesn't mean, you know, that our respect or our worship, if we happen to be in those places, should not take place. Even Lord Chaitanya, if he would be passing through his pilgrimage, especially in South India when he was there, and he would happen to pass through a Shiva temple, he would go and pay his respects. But he would not plan his pilgrimage route based on Lord Shiva's temples. But if it happens to be there, he would go and pay his respects. And that's an understanding which should be there amongst all of us. Because that fanaticism can lead to offenses towards these great personalities, which is very risky. One of the Vaishnavas, Sri Vaishnava, you know, this strict understanding of only worshipping the Supreme Lord, only Vaishnava, only worshipping Vishnu or his forms, even in interfaith meeting, you know, all world religions are together, he would not mind going to church or a mosque, but he'll not go to Shiva temple for an interfaith meeting. That's too extreme. So that's how this understanding can come, which is risky. He doesn't mind going anywhere else, but he'll not go to Shiva temple. So even Sri Ramanujacharya, he was trying to counteract this mindset of people, which is very common, that everything is same, everything is one, anything you do, you can achieve perfection. To counteract that mindset, he completely rejected visiting or worshipping the temples of any demigods like Lord Shiva or any other demigods. But the idea was not to disrespect. Idea was to make clear in people's mind that this is that what is the position of the Supreme Lord specifically. So I think seeing such examples, such extreme attitude does come in some people. You know, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that, you know, he writes very nicely, if we go to a place where God is worshipped in a different way than our worship, we should stand there and in mood of prayer and think how merciful the Lord is that He manifested in this way to elevate all these people. And we should feel inspired to become more devoted to the Lord. In the manifestation, we are familiar for worshipping Him. So if for any preaching purpose, any purpose, we happen to go to any other place of worship, including any church, any mosque, any other temple. For book distribution, so many times we go to Sri Vishnu temple. We are so excited to go and take darshan. By childhood we were trained, even if we are passing through a mosque or a church, it was so natural for us to just pay our respects. This confusion was never there, even the parents were not devotees, but this clarity was always given by family also, that this is place of worship. We go to temple, but this is also place of worship. So this extremism can cause problem, but too much of loose mixing can also confuse if someone is not situated properly in scriptural knowledge. These personalities, like we speak of different tattvas, Jiva tattva, Vishnu tattva, Shiva tattva, Shakti tattva, that these personalities are there, demigods, they are categorized under the 400,000 human species. They fall under that category. 8.4 million species are there. So these demigods are under those species. So now as soon as we say 400,000 human species, they are not human. They are not equated to humans. But that 400,000 species which are mentioned, that equate to that those personalities who have facility over other 8 million species, who has more facility in comparison to those other remaining 8 million species to understand and to approach God. And in that category, they fall under that 400,000 species. Not a human form. So even the Danavas, the demons also fall in that 400,000 species, because they also have complete facility to understand that they are beyond body, they are spiritual, their soul. Hiranyakashipu, he gave a complete, he preached to his family after the death of Hiranyaksha, his brother, complete science of soul, that you should not worry, you are spiritual, you are soul, so you should not worry. He knew that, he had that understanding. Hiranyakashipu said that he even understood that Paramatma, Vishnu, his position. He said at one place that he used to be equal to everyone before. Now he has become partial. Hiranyakashipu is saying this. So much of understanding he has. Bali Maharaj, all these personalities, they know, but they choose not to worship. So that's why they are also in that 400,000 species, based on their facility to understand the absolute truth. They have that facility, whereas animal species, aquatics, plants, they don't have that facility, which are separate. So in one of the purports in third canto, Srila Prabhupada concludes this particular understanding. He says, this worship of demigod by general populace is also advised in Vedic literatures, just so people can accept the superior power of the Lord. The demigods are servants of the Lord, deputed to look after the management of various activities of universal affairs. Therefore, it is advised in the Vedic scriptures that one should perform yajnas to appease the demigods. Then he makes a final point. He says, but one who is devoted to the Supreme Lord has no need to appease the demigods. Worship of the demigods by common people is an arrangement for acknowledging the supremacy of the Supreme Lord, but it is not necessary. Such appeasement is generally recommended for material gains only. I found this very, very important. There was like very clear understanding of what is the approach towards the demigod should be is given. So Srila Prabhupada just continues in this purport and finishes with this point that this material world is so created that one has to act sinfully, knowingly or unknowingly. And then the last he says, nor does he desire willingly or unwillingly to do anything which is sinful, but still things happen in people's life. This place is very difficult to judge what happens to us when we are out of this place or while we are in temple. It's so difficult to control situations. Real story, I'll just tell you and I'll finish with that, just to know how this material world operates. It's so painful. One of my distant relatives, they went to one of their uncles died. This is their two families, husband, wife, two sons, husband, wife, two sons. So one of the elder brother died. So one of the person died. So his wife and two sons were there, along with his brother, his wife and two sons. So these 6-7 people were there. They went to Ganges to throw his ashes after the body was burned. So his brother, along with his one of the sons, went in the water to throw the ashes in the water. And he went in, and they really wanted for the ashes to go properly in the water, so that it doesn't come out on the shore or someone doesn't take out, because they put some coins also, because many people, they just do so many things there to take the money out. So they went a little bit inside to put the ashes. So they both slipped. So the person who died, his one son and his brother, they both started drowning and going with the flow, because Ganges flow was so powerful. Seeing that, it just happened, it's in my own distant family. Seeing that, both the sons also went to save, and they both also drowned. Within 5 minutes, only 2 ladies of the family left, and all 6 men died. Within 5 minutes, all 6 men finished, only 2 ladies in family left with the cars there. What to do? Completely shattered. This is material world. It's amazing how powerful things can happen. 5 minutes. One was anyways finished. Just 5 minutes. Only 2 ladies in the family of 8 people left. All drowned. So, only thing we have control over is how much attachment we have developed to chant the holy names and to serve the Supreme Lord and His devotees. Rest, only thing we have left once we are gone, is the solace of those people who will be left behind, which will not do any use to us unless they are devotees doing some chanting for us or praying for us. This example came to mind because last night my sister was telling that one of my aunties, she's not in relation, but one of the aunties, my mother's very close friend, they were 3 sisters. All 3 gradually had, their husband died, and they've all had 1, 2 son kids each, girls and all. So they were very young to me, so I would go and would play with the kids when I was maybe 14, 15. So they were 6, 7. So only mothers are left with all the kids. There's no father. So one mother met an accident, died on the spot. Some bus came and hit her. So on her, this processes of that rituals, death rituals, another sister, is it really it had happened? Yeah, last night only I got to know this. While sleeping, I was just thinking about the class, and she told me this when I was talking to her, that other sister slipped from the stairs, went in coma. And this is 6 months back. These 2 things happened. And then what she was telling me yesterday is the third sister got a heart attack
she couldn't even reach the hospital, died. Now only kids left in the family. No father, no mother. Only kids. If the Supreme Lord is not there as a shelter, then what is the shelter? Where is the shelter? It's gone. All the shelters gone. And that can happen to any one of us. Then all the shelters are gone. It's easy to say. My job sitting here is to say only this, I'm saying. But to have realization over it and to have understanding, it's a little hard. So you can just pray to the Supreme Lord that this may come in. Because anything can happen to anyone, anytime. These are very horror stories, but they are real stories. Hare Krishna. You finish that. I wanted to finish on a good note, but I thought better finish on a real note than a good note. Any questions or comments? Any point Mataji want to share? Any other? Yes, Roji.
What you are saying is we should have deep relationship with Krishna only, and all the rest we have to respect.
Demigods, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Deep relation means your love, your affection, your heart. That is for Krishna. Rest all our duties we are performing with the other demigods, the personalities. Of course, with family members you will have again loving relationships, but again, if it's not in, if it's not aligned with the Krishna conscious philosophy, then it is very powerful, it really grips you. Yes, Prabhupada.
Usually, when one wants to come closer to Krishna, then there's an idea that you become aloof from your relatives, your friends. No one can relate to you anymore. It's like you become antisocial or something. So,
yeah.
What is the meaning of taking shelter of Krishna
and still living in this world? So, the question is that sometimes when we're trying to come close to Krishna, we become aloof from society, relatives, friends, and it appears that we can't relate with each other, they can't relate with us, and it's very lonely, separate relationship, right? So, what it means to take shelter of Krishna? Prabhupada is saying that for those in renounced order of life, they depend on the Supreme Lord. Taking complete shelter of the Supreme Lord and not considering how the society or relatives think about them. I'm just paraphrasing, he didn't speak exactly in those terms. But devotees, in order to preach and have maintain good relationship with the family or society, maintain some communication so that they can also be given a chance to come up in their Krishna consciousness. Whereas for someone who is in Grihastha Ashram, who is passing through that phase, then it's his duty to at least take care of the basic needs of those who are near ones around. If someone is working outside and has a family, even if he doesn't want to do anything for society, he is forced to do by paying taxes. He just can't avoid. But what taxes are you paying traveling all over the world? Nothing. It's other than your fare taxes or anything. There is no obligation. But if someone is in householder life, there is obligation. There are forced obligations. If someone is living with their parents, and suppose parents are not devotees, and then a person acts in a way that wife is there, kids are there, parents are there, everything is there, and then you act so aloof, so detached, that they become critical to the process of devotional service, then what is the use? So we don't have to come under their control and make the process diluted for us. That is okay. or at least we can act in a very loving, respectful way that they are also encouraged to practice it. So, from coming to your question, then how we can take shelter of Krishna is when I joined the Brahmacharya Ashram, at least, if not wrong, at least 8 to 10 times my spiritual master told me, be very nice to your parents, be very nice to your parents. At least in every call he would tell me this. He didn't ask me for anything else. He didn't tell me if they push you too much, then get a job. Or he said, just be very nice to them, be very nice to them. Maintain that relationship, be very affectionate to them. So, at least that much we can do while doing our devotional services, while interacting with the world in order to give Krishna consciousness to them. Gurujan Prabhu was once speaking, we were in the retreat, and one Mataji asked a question that I feel very close to my mother. Sometimes when I feel very down, I just call her, I speak to her. So what should be the correct way of dealing? Gurujan Prabhu encouraged her. He said, why not? And she's a full-time devotee, husband, wife, full-time devotees. He said, why not? Speak to your mother. Have loving relationship, have exchanges. But her conception or her understanding of how you should behave as a devotee should not come on you. That should come from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. But what is wrong in having nice relationship, at least healthy communication? That's one side of it. The second side is that initially to detox, initially to really come out of that strong bonding, one can for certain period take certain steps which appear very harsh, but these are protective steps. One really stops any communication with friends, old friends we have, because we know what they talk, they only talk nonsense. So but we don't want that. But once we are little settled, then why can't we develop gradually certain relationships, Facebook, some chatting, some messages, and slowly encourage them to come to Krishna consciousness. That's my understanding on it. If anyone wants to add something.
So in that area, he says, in setting example, he says four things, four S. Siddhartha first, then sadhana, then seva, then sadachara. So all these things, nobody will see how much Siddhartha I know, how much philosophy I know, how many shlokas I know. They won't see that, nor they will see how much sadhana like I'm doing, nor how much seva I'm doing. All that they will see is your sadachara, your behavior. So that will reflect what we are doing. In that area, he says one example of once Prabhupada was going with his disciples, and one lady, she used to always, one old lady, she used to always complain about the devotees and all. She used to live close to temple. She would go on complaining always. So once Prabhupada was going for a walk, and then Prabhupada he stood, and she was standing outside, and he was talking to her. How are you and all, is everything okay, this, how is your health? Are you happy? She went on conversing for half an hour. Then after that, then Prabhupada was going, then all the disciples, he never even uttered Krishna or anything about Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
And then all the disciples, they were very curious, they wanted to ask her, but because they were really trying so hard to get even one minute of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada spent half an hour with her. So they really wanted to ask Prabhupada. One thing we want to ask you, you spoke to that for half an hour before, you never told her anything about Krishna or anything. So we want to know why. They said that no, these old people, they are lonely. They need this, somebody to care and talk to them. That is where we have to first relate to what their actual need is.
Mm-hmm.
Then from there, then we can connect to them. First, we develop a relationship.
Yeah.
Very nice. Mm-hmm.
First time when I went to India after becoming devotee here, after 2 years being in Australia, I would not do anything which my parents would tell, because I would think, I'm a devotee, you are better than you and all. So one devotee was visiting locally, who helped us initially start chanting before I came to Australia. So my mother just told him that that's how I act, that I just don't do what they asked me to do because I think I'm busy with my Krishna Vacha stuff. He chastised me so much in front of my mother. So heavy he was that I understood one point. With parents, don't try to be a big devotee. Just try to be their son who is a devotee, but be their son also. If you really want them to be little favorable to Krishna consciousness. And it helped. It helped. They are also now fully practicing devotees. Anything else?
Actually Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita itself, in third chapter Krishna says you are taking everything from them because everything is coming, like, you know, they are giving air, sun, rain, everything you are getting, and you have to offer them in return. The gratitude you have to show them. Yes, in the same later chapters Krishna tells that Avidhi Purva tell them, so this is, he's talking in a lower level in third chapter, in a higher level, seventh level.
That's why Prabhupada's purport makes things clear. You don't have to fully worship, fully go for the worship, but have a respectful relationship. Okay. Hare Krishna. Granthrashyam Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.